he wanted to back out of the bone marrow donation. Because the way it works is when you get called on this registry, they give you a choice. You still don't have to do it. It's not like according to the law now that you're in, they're going to come to your house and you know, like carry you away. They give you the option of backing out. And he felt that this was a halachic issue. Can he back out? And he was 100% right. It definitely is a halachic issue. And that was his question. So that's one question we want to answer. Can he back out? He now matched with someone who's dying. Because you don't do bone marrow transplants unless the individual is really dying. It's a last resort treatment still in our time. It meant it failed conventional therapy. And it is not easy to find a match, as you can imagine from all the publicity about trying to find matches. So here he was, the person who could potentially save this person's life, and he wanted to back out. He wanted to back out because nowadays when you give bone marrow, I don't know if anyone's experienced it or read about it, there's two options. One is the old-fashioned general anesthesia, go in and, in a rather invasive procedure, take out bone marrow. The risks involved in that are the risks of general anesthesia, which are not zero, but they're considered low enough by most doctors that they would never raise it as an issue in telling you not to do something. There is a little pain that will be experienced after the procedure for a couple of days as well. That's conventional bone marrow. What is being done more and more today, and what he was being encouraged, and that's putting it mildly, the doctors were pressuring him to do, was something that is called a neupogen treatment, which meant, instead of going in for bone marrow, right, the purpose of going into bone marrow is that that's where those stem cells are, those primitive cells are, adult stem cells. The other way you can get those adult stem cells is if you inspire the bone marrow to churn them out and get them out into the bloodstream. You don't have to stick deep needles into bone. You could just take blood out. It's a much less invasive. You don't need any general anesthesia. So on the surface, it looks like, wow, this is the way to go. It should change the whole issue of bone marrow donation altogether. The problem is, and this is what he had learned in medical school, and they don't make a big deal out of this for people that are taking your blood, is that neupogen treatment is new. And that's one thing to always know. When you're dealing with new treatments in medicine, have your eyes open, your head up. Because, you know, the way it works is things look good, and we always try them when they're looking good. But sometimes you don't find out what's bad till many years later. So neupogen is one such treatment. It's new. And there isn't a long, you're part of the learning curve, anyone who's getting that treatment. Why is there any reason to worry? Well, there are reports that neupogen, which is used in certain patients, was causing leukemia. It was causing the person to get leukemia. Now, that's frightening as soon as you hear that. How could they be doing this to normal people, the normal tzaddikim donating their bone marrow? You're going to give them something that might cause leukemia? So it's not as bad as it sounds, because what the doctors will tell you is, yes, there are reports, but they are in a specific context. These are people that are predisposed. They're people that are being treated for hematological disorders in the first place. And they are a group that's predisposed to getting leukemias anyway. And two, the doses they're getting is much greater and for longer periods of time, etc., etc. So they told him, right, so don't worry, you're okay. Now, but of course he has it in his head, okay, you say don't worry, but do you have a study that shows, this is what I told them to ask them. I said, do you have a study that shows that in people giving bone marrow donations and get this amount of neupogen that there's no incidence, have you proven that it's safe? No, because there's no study like that because there's not enough of it yet. There will be, and you need time. You need, like, show me in 10 years none of these people ended up with leukemia. That's what I want to see. So it's an unknown, but the doctors all intuitively feel it's safe. So that was the complexity of his question, was we have this, at least in his mind for sure, right, there's a sakana element to his giving this donation. That was case number one. Case number two,
you have to get general anesthesia for
the conventional bone marrow, unless you're like,
I was told
tough.
Otherwise.
What?
I was told otherwise.
Really? Well, you could do, you could just take a lot of pain, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, the second method, you certainly don't need general
anesthesia.
No, in
the first method.
For really digging into somebody's...
They dug into me, so...
Yeah? Okay.
And they told me...
Did they give you conscious sedation at least?
I mean, I chose general anesthesia then, but they said...
Ah, good choice.
They said I could have done specific.
Right, you could do... You could. I don't recommend it, but... that would just replace, that would make the shayla now, okay, less sakana, more tzar. So there's tzar involved. And that's also a shayla. How much tzar do I have to do? The second question is also now a very common one, kidney donation, live kidney donation. And this was, I don't remember if I told you this story, but this was there was an individual who had a dream. I don't want to get into the whole, it's a wild story. It's someone I know who, he's a very mystical oriented person. And he had a dream, and it just so happened he had the dream after reading an article about this poor girl who was dying of kidney failure, and the mother was begging the public, somebody donate a kidney to save my daughter. And then he had a dream about it, and he was convinced, he had a siman min hashamayim, that he has to do this. His wife was adamantly opposed, and he wasn't in perfect health, but let's put that aside, we won't complicate matters with that. He then began, as the time came to really do it, he also was getting some cold feet. And he wanted to know, you know, should he back out? Can he back out? Is he have to do this? Or is it perhaps usher for him to do it? He said somebody told him it was usher for him to give the kidney. So what do we do with those two cases? Kidney donation, bone marrow donation. So how do you approach a shayla like this? What is the starting point?
Well, kidney is a similar risk.
Before we talk about kidney risk, okay, let's get that down. So there's definitely general anesthesia risk, right? And the procedure itself, you could have complications. There are definitely known complications of bleeding. Unfortunately, there are fatalities. If you ask, you know, it's funny, we'll see in a minute, the tshuva that the Tzitz Eliezer had and Avadi Yosef. Avadi Yosef's data, his doctors told him, 99% nothing will happen to the donor of the kidney. And Rav Oldenburg, his doctors told him there was a definite suffix sakana, enough that he said don't do it, right? But what is the true data is closer to what Rav Avadi Yosef said. For the donors, you hear about, the only case you hear about is when, you know, Rechon Letzlan, there's a horrible thing that happens. But for the most part, like 95 to 100 to 99%. Of the time, the donors are okay. And if you ask the kidney transplant specialist, that's what they'll tell you. You know one, right? Roman. Dr. Greenstein. Yes. I asked him, and he told me 99% safe. That's at the operation. What's the big unknown? Well, here you have one kidney. The rest of life is one kidney. So is that a problem? Well, not necessarily. Why? Because most diseases that affect kidneys affect kidneys, not just one kidney. You don't, a person who's going to have, chas v'shalom, bad renal disease, it's always going to affect both, with two exceptions that are rare events, but they are possible. And that is trauma. If there's trauma to one side of your body, and you knock out a kidney, that's going to knock out one kidney. And if you don't have another one where you should have, you're in big trouble. The other one, certain cancers, rare cancers that'll affect only one side. So it's not like it's without risk. So there is, and it's a tough to quantify amount of risk. But no one could say that there's no risk involved in kidney donation. Again, it's far, far from Rove or close to Rove. It's a mute, less than 10% for sure. Right? Less than 10% risk on both of these issues.
Does it change your life in any other way? You rub the same around the vials?
Yes, it should not affect your life in any other way. They wouldn't promote it if it did. They wouldn't. There were some people who speculated you can get higher blood pressure because of it. That's like a debate. But in reality, no. If you ask the doctors, certainly the doctors involved in kidney transplants, they minimize the risk to the donor. They want the donor to know that you have the risk of the procedure. In terms of the long-term risks, that they minimize completely.
You said most diseases hit both the kidneys, but does it happen sometimes that both kidneys get hit, but sometimes one kidney gets lost and the other one doesn't?
Yeah, it's unusual. It's unusual. Like, what is the most? What's the kidney disease that most people, if they're going to get kidney disease, don't have something inherited? Will get is if they have an episode of low blood pressure for whatever reason, that hits the kidneys and can damage the kidneys, and it hits them simultaneously in the same way. And all the acquired diseases, the congenital diseases that could come out, lupus, things like that, also both diabetes, both the general diseases affect both simultaneously.
Does the person do better if he has both kidneys working versus one?
No. You can do fine with one kidney. Definitely do fine with one kidney. Baruch Hashem, you know, backup. All right. So, in approaching this question, to me, the pivotal starting point is, what is my responsibility in terms of saving another person? That's where it starts, right? That's the question. That's where you have to start this Shiloh. How far do I have to go? What's the mitzvah minato? What's the havim? What's the havim? I have to do anything. Where does it come from? Somebody? So take a look at that Gemara. It's important that we look at this Gemara just a little bit in detail, because it is going to surface with every contemporary posex approach. There's a take on this sugya. Very straightforward sugya. Page 7 of the old handbook. Minayin l'roya eschavero shehu tovea benahar ochaya gorarta olistim ba'inolav shehu chayev lehatsiva. Talmud loma lo tamod adam u'echa. So there it is. There's a law in the Torah that if you see somebody drowning or attacked by animals or attacked by bandits or whatever it is, and you could save them, you got to go save them. And the Gemara goes on, to say we need both these psukim to tell me that I have to do a lot for this. I have to try to save him to the best of my ability, right? What else do I have to do? I have to be willing to put out money to save him. Right? Basically, those are the chiyuvim. If you look at the Shulchan Aruch, the Choshen Mishpat, that's what it comes out. L'maisa, hu ba'atzmo, o shiyizkar acherim lahatzio. You have to either hire people, go to every effort you can to save another person, or you got to do everything you can yourself. What does the Gemara nor the Shulchan Aruch mention as necessary in saving another person? What don't you have to give up? Chita, you don't have to give up your life. That seems pashut, right? And that's, we all know Chayecha Kodmin, right? That famous sugya. You don't have to give up your life for another person. Certainly if it's the Vadai, that you're going to die, you certainly don't have to do that. We're not into martyrdom to that degree. You shouldn't. You shouldn't do that. What else? What is another Shiloh? What about, this is a famous Shach. What about Aver? What about giving up an organ, the Lo Sakana? Just giving up a body part. So, the siman that deals with this is the siman that deals with what. This is a lav. What do I have to do for a lav? What am I chayiv? To avoid being over on a lav, what do I have to do? What is Kuf Nun Zayin, the Ramah, very famous Ramah? What does he say? It's not in the handout.
Kol Amana.
Right. Kol Amana. You got to be willing to give it all. So all your money. So the Shach says, okay, I don't have to give my life for a lav, but I have to give up all my money. What about my limbs and organs? Where does that fit in? Is that like the money, or is that like my life? So he's really a little masupak. You get the feel that there's a suffix here, but he goes l'kula. He passes l'kula. He says, you are not chayev to give up an organ to save another person. So it could be that that's the end of the story here. To some degree it is. What does it tell you right off the bat in terms of our two cases? You have a real psak here. This is how we pass them, right? The Shach, Kuf Mem Zayin.
Even the Pikuach Nefesh, you're talking about love in general.
Well, we'll get to Pikuach Nefesh in a second, but in general, for a lav, we're dealing with a lav. L'tam al adam reyacha. Right? L'tam al adam reyacha. That's the lav. What other lav is there? What other halacha is there that's requiring me to do this? The only thing that's pushing me to get involved in anything in terms of saving another person is this lav. L'tam al adam reyacha. So for that lav, I know I have to pay everything. I have to be willing to go broke, right? I don't have to die, that's for sure, right? And now the Shach tells me I don't have to give up an organ. So what's poshut? Of my two cases, do you know anything now for sure? Starting point. Okay. One thing is the guy who wants to give up his kidney, he's certainly not chayiv to do that. You don't have to give up your kidney. There's no chiyuv. There's no. You're not over. If there's a person standing in front of you who needs your kidney and you don't give it to them. What about the bone marrow case?
Even
huh?
But even kidney might also not be equitable because...
Why not?
Because the Shach can never imagine a situation where we'll give up an organ in his time.
Why should that be?
And live a completely functional life.
No, no. The assumption here is that there's no suffix of kana whatsoever, right?
But
it's an interesting point, though. But not a normal, fully functional life. I don't know. You're right. I don't know if that's a factor or not. I don't know if it's a factor. We'll see in a minute. There's a tshuva from the Radbaz that's going to touch upon this. But you're right. The Shach, that's the one thing we're limited by in drawing too many conclusions from the Shach, is that perhaps the assumption of the Shach was there's no way you can lose an organ and not be affected somehow for the long term. And here I'm telling you, kidneys, well, you are affected somehow, right? There is some effect. The question is quantifying it, I don't know. Okay. What about the bone marrow case, though? Clearly, that's nothing. Bone marrow regenerates. You're not giving up an aver in the sense the Shach is talking about. The bone marrow is going to come back. Your blood's going to come back. You're not doing that. What's the only issue in the bone marrow case? Suffolk, Sokka. Right? And that's the one thing you don't find in the Shulchan Aruch. In the Shulchan Aruch itself, you will not find the issue of putting yourself the suffix sakana, right? For somebody else. You mean the cases from the Gemara? So what are you saying? You're saying that the setting of the Gemara is talking about a suffix sakana. Keep that in mind. It's going to be very important. People read this Gemara, meaning Gedolim, read this Gemara. Some go the way you're implying right now. Right? It's going to be Rav Avadya Yosef. He also says, look at the context of the Gemara. How could you deny there's sakana? But what if I told you the Meiri, on this Gemara says, and caveat below sakana. All this is true, right? Go save your drowning friend, go save the wild animals and all that stuff. As long as you know, there's no sakana. Right? But we'll see. Your point is very well taken.
Can you give other parts of your body away that regenerate as well?
Like what? What else regenerates?
Isn't your liver, part of your liver regenerate? Can you give like a piece of
that? Yeah, but that giving away your liver is a far greater sakana than your kidney. Although it is doable, and that's not a bad question, because liver can regenerate a little. And you could really do without a lot of your liver. Again, Baruch Hashem, but the liver is one where I'd say, the more liver you got, probably the better off you are. Because there you can lose parts of it. And you only have one. And like every piece counts and that kind of thing. And the procedure itself, there's big sakana. Liver donations are far less thought about by people in general because of all the sakana involved.
Just going back to the Shach, so did you photocopy the Shach on your brother?
No, it's not here.
Okay, so I don't know what he says inside, but is he definitely talking about a type of aver which...
He just says aver.
So it's sakana, or is he talking about like...
stamina.
Yeah, no, I mean just like...
He's definitely talking about no sakana. Here's how he expresses it.
Okay, right.
Because it was in the context of saying...
Peripheral aver or something.
Right, right. Like, well, we'll see what...
The,
you know, a hand, a foot, an earlobe... Something like that. But we'll see. Okay. Why is it definitely no sakana? Because he's setting it up as a case where he's putting in the middle, you don't have to put yourself in a vadai sakana for your to save someone else. You do have to give up all your money. And he's saying, what is an aver equal to? So obviously it's aver without sakana. Otherwise it already fits into the sakana category.
So that could actually be, I mean, in the example of the kidney and the bone marrow, so you might say the reverse, that the kidney, you know, obviously there's sakana also, but it's much less of, even though the bone marrow could regenerate, there's the sakana is more of the issue, I think.
No? By the kidney?
No, I'm talking about the bone marrow.
Which has more sakana?
Well, maybe not.
I'm not going to say. I don't know. In other words, like the bone marrow one with the, especially the new treatment. To me, that's an unknown. I agonized with this person.
It's not really. It's not an.
I made like five phone calls to really experts in this field, trying to get somebody to just give me more than their hunch on this issue. Mm-hmm. It became a real dilemma because you know they're all positive. Every one of them is positive without any data that it's not dangerous. But how do you tell the guy? You know, like, I would think very hard about it before I would do it. And what he did, I'll tell you what he ended up doing, and I've got to give him credit, and he went with the conventional bone marrow. He said, look, I'm not doing the Neupogen. For the rest of my life, I'll be worried. And I went along with him on this. I said, yeah, probably there's like 1% chance there's a problem. But you'll be thinking about it for many, many years because this could be something that happens 20 years later. He's a young guy. He's 20 years old, right? But he was willing to do the bone marrow. And that he did. And he took the general anesthesia and he gave the bone marrow the conventional way. Even though they were saying, you're crazy, this is so much easier. But he wanted to do the right thing. But the sakana was unquantifiable. That was the problem. All right. So I'm telling you, the Shulchan Aruch does not mention the case, which is going to be the focus, putting yourself besafek sakana for somebody's vada sakana. Where is it mentioned? So there is a Yerushalmi that has a famous case of Rav Imi that was captured. And there's a machlokis between, the Gemara says, Rav Yonasan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yonasan felt, the expression he used was, Yichro Chameis Sadino, he's dead, just forget it. Don't go near that. He's in danger, you're not going to endanger yourself to save him. And Reish Lakish said, no, either I'm going to kill or be killed, but I'm going in. So what made this Yerushalmi very famous was the Beis Yosef in the Torah of Choshen Mishpat, Ar Siman, Taf Chavav. And the Beis Yosef says, B'Yerushalmi Mesik Afilu Lahachvis Atzmo B'Safik Sakana Chayev and gives a tam for it. Mipnei She'ala Vadai V'Husach. So this is a very famous Beis Yosef. It's the start of all the problems because I shouldn't call it problems, but it's of all the investigation. Because the Beis Yosef here clearly seems to say, you, based on Reish Lakish's behavior in this Yerushalmi, that you are chayiv to put yourself besafek sakana to save somebody who's in a badai sakana. Things get interesting though, because when you, like I said, in the Shulchan Aruch, that's not the way the Beis Yosef paskin. He never mentions it. So the Sma brings that up. He says, wait a second, what happened to the Beis Yosef's comments? About the Yerushalmi, why didn't he paskin that way in the Shulchan Aruch? So the Sma says, and that you have, he says, it must be because the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rosh did not paskin like this Yerushalmi. Everybody's against it, so therefore he didn't paskin like it. And then the Piskei Tshuva takes it to the next degree, and he says, why didn't the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rosh paskin this way? Because obviously, even though Yerushalmi might hold that way, the Bavli disagrees. So now, that starts all the Achronim, many, many Achronim, searching where does the Bavli disagree? Where does the Bavli say you are not supposed to put yourself besafek sakana to save somebody v'vada sakana? So there are many, many places. If you want all the Makoros, all the Achronim that talk about the possible Bavli that disagrees, look in the Tzitz Eliezer, right? The one that I gave you, Tzimam Mem Hei, and it's Chelek, what is it? Ches. There, he goes through all those different sheets. It's very interesting. You get to see a lot of different sugyas, some agadita, some not agadita. None of that is really going to play a role for the major poskim. They're not interested in all the agadita. They go right to our Gemara. So start with the Tzitz Eliezer. I want to develop three sheetos. Rav Waldenberg, Rav Moshe, and Rav Avadi Yosef. Using those three, let's see what we would do with our two cases.
So I asked the question about the Vadai Sakana. Mm-hmm. Can you distinguish between the case someone's Tobeya Biyam, someone who needs a bone marrow transplant? Meaning, a Tobeya Biyam, Bakum Shani, you don't have two guys in there, but bone marrow, if you wait another month, someone has come up as a possible candidate.
I mean, it's
also, no?
I mean, so there's a Chaya chasing someone, you're the only guy that can do it. Maybe here's
Rove Time, that's not
maybe there's another guy.
Rove Time, there's not going to be another bone marrow. It's such a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to have somebody who matches bone marrow. It's not not something I would bank on. And people that are ready for bone marrow transplant don't have much time.
Not like months.
It's really a last resort. It means that the person's dying. And every day is a suffix and kind of to them. It means their blood counts are very low. They can get an infection and it could be over like that. Mm-hmm. It is definitely not something you can play around with like that at all. You have a bone marrow transplant candidate. You know, one of the reasons they're shifting from standard bone marrow to this new Neupogen is the rapidness that you can get the stem cells. The other one, you got to go the whole procedure and clearing in 18 days. That was part of the problem with it. It was too much of a delay. You want to rush in there and get them as soon as possible. So it's comparable in its immediacy. What it might not be comparable is in the degree of risk. That's what we have to sort of figure out. That's what the post can have to figure out. So what is what Waldenberg does? He starts with Agamar and he says, wait a second. You're entertaining the possibility that you have to put yourself in suffix lakana to avoid the law of lotamal adam reyecha. I'll tell you two clear-cut riyas that that's not true. One is, what does Agamar say? Agamar says, you have to be willing to work very hard, you matriarch yourself and really go after it to save the guy. And two, you have to give money for it, hire somebody. But what does it not say? That you have to put yourself in suffix lakana. So Voldemort says, pshita, if that would have been required, then that would have been the first thing the Gemara would say. Part of the Talmud of the Melecha is you got to put yourself a suffix akana. So the response to that, though, that a Rabbi Yosef is going to say is, yeah, Gemara is telling you that, right? Like you guys said. Isn't the Gemara really telling you that? Because of the scenarios that the Gemara sets up, those are not scenarios that are devoid of risk. Nevertheless, Rav Waldenberg holds his gun. And he mentions a Maram Shik, and then he's going to bring in another ayah. When it comes to Shabbos, let's say, if there's a situation of Safek Sakana on Shabbos, is it Docha Shabbos? Is Safek Sakana Docha Shabbos? Go on. Yeah. Ooh, we're definitely going to do the Shabbos time. Of course it is. Of course it is. You could be Mechal, Shabbos Daraisa, because of Safek Sakana. So does it make any sense then to say, if that's true, that you are going to be required to avoid the law to put yourself the suffix sakana? Do you hear that argument? It's a very strong argument. Everyone's going to use this argument to some degree. It really doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The only imperative to get involved in saving this person's life is a law. How could you possibly think that you should put yourself a suffix sakana in order to fulfill or avoid being over on the lav, when we're allowed to be mechal Shabbos daraisa, when we're in a situation of suffix sakana?
So interesting the fact that the altar of the Lebrech is not a mere lav, but there's some kind of lav.
Ah, good. We'll get to that. That's where Moshe Feinstein says that. And we'll see what he does with it. Somewhere Moshe does with it. At this point, Rav Waldenberg does not treat it any differently than any other law. And his final point is from the Radvaz. The Radvaz was asked this very, very famous question. What would you do? Some bad guys come over to you, right? And they say, look, we're about to kill your friends, but we'll let them off the hook. For one thing, you let us cut your arm off. That was the shayla. Is the person chayiv to allow his arm to be cut off for the purpose of saving the life of his friend? And the Shoel said, I'll give you a kal vachomer as to why he should have to do it. What's the kal vachomer? Again, Shabbos. Pikuach nefesh is docha Shabbos, right? What about sakanas aver and Shabbos? What's the din? We're going to talk about this in Yetzir Shem. This comes up all the time. What happens with the guy who might have broken his leg on Shabbos? This is really always one that gets everybody. Right? Do I take him in to the hospital? Does that allow me to do the araisas, sakanas, eder?
Stamina.
You can put medicine in your eyes, right?
Right, so a special case by eyes, we'll talk about it, right?
That's a dindo.
The eyes and the heart seem to be connected. That's an interesting, that he brings up that cellular red eyes, actually, from the Vodazara. Right? And it could be it's a very special case, we're going to talk about it for sure. But Stam Eiver, otherwise, not the eyes, we can leave the eyes out of this for now. You cannot be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa. We'll have to see how we deal with these situations then. There are practical advice, what you do, that we're going to talk about in Yetzir Shem in 2 weeks. Because, you know, you have to make sure there's no sakana. We're talking no sakana at all. Many broken bones involve a sakana to the nefesh. And as much as we'll talk Torah, I'm going to try to give you those practical tips so that you can handle the situations better. But the Kal Vachomer works as follows. You hear what's coming, right? Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos. Shabbos is, so to speak, Docha Sakanas Eiver. Kal Vachomer, Pikuach Nefesh, should be Docha Eiver. So shouldn't the guy have to give up his arm? So the Radvaz gives about 6 reasons that that's an incorrect assumption, right? One of them, we're interested in 2 of them. One of them is he can't imagine any aver that could be cut off without there being some suffix sakan. And this is what Rav Oldenburg was going to emphasize, right? So the revised pshita that you don't need to put yourself to suffix sakana in order to save somebody. That's one agenda. And then I want you to look, if you're on page 9, at reason number 6. You can look at all the other reasons. I'm not going to go into them. They're all why you don't have to have your arm cut off in order to save your friend. What's number 6? Number 6 just it reminds me of the first things we talked about from Rav Aaron's piece on the ethic above and beyond halacha. Look what he says. V'tu, it's like 6 lines from the bottom. Dichtiv derachea darchei noam. V'tzarech shemishpatei teratei liyum askimim el haseichel v'hasvara. V'ech yale al da'ateinu shianich adam v'same eseinu olachtoch esyado oradlo. And he's being very careful, by the way. What is he picking? What type of sakanas eiver is he picking? Ones that are not sakanas nefesh, right. Not what the neshama is telling you about. He's saying, there's no sakana, even assuming there's no sakana, there's no way, if darchei darchei noam, you would ever be chayiv to give up an organ to save a person. However, is it okay? Is it mutter? Yes. It's a midas chasidus. And that's going to be the conclusion of Rav Waldenberg, is going to be right along the lines of the Radvaz. 2 points. One, thing I didn't read this part, but he refers to somebody who does put himself the suffix sakana to save someone else as chasid shota.
Who's this?
Both the Radvaz and Rav Waldenberg. That's his conclusion. Since we clearly, there's no, absolutely no time to say that for a lav, you're allowed to put yourself a suffix sakana, right? If you do it, it's not a meritorious thing at all. You are a chasid shota. However, to give up an organ, to give up a part of your body, there is no chiyuv, right? And now we're saying without any sakana at all, it is a midas chasidus. This is the tzitz elias. Rav Moshe and Rav Avadi Yosef, we're going to do much quicker. What does Rav Moshe say? So you have it all over here on the next page. But Rav Moshe takes the following approach. He agrees with that analysis of the sugya. And he agrees with the analysis of Allah. He says, and he quotes the Shach, and he says, no one would ever say the following two things, that you're chayiv to ever put yourself at risk to avoid the lav of the Kama of Amalekha. It's impossible, right? For a lav, the most you have to give up is all your money. And you don't even have to give up an aver, like the Shach said. Right? But he makes one important differentiation which separates him from the Tzitzelians. On number one over here, right? This is a case of Safek Sakana. This is a case of Eber Velo Sakana. So here he would basically agree, right? Just say Ein Chiyuv. And over here he says not a Chasid Shoker. Mutter. Why is it mutter? Right? What happens normally? What's the din? Going back to your day, right? What's the din if it's Yahar Vayavor and you put yourself Pesachana for a lav? I mean, it's Yavor Val Tahari. How do we pass it on that? Right? You're not supposed to put yourself in a Sakana for a lav. What if you did? Is that a good thing? Are you being a great Jew? What are we passing? What is the Shach passing your day on that Shaila? L'chayev b'nafshel, you did the wrong thing. You're like a chassid. We're not sure what the Radvaz meant by chassid shota. You're not a good guy, right? Maybe he's just saying you're stupid. You're not an avaryan. I don't know. Right? It's not clear. But in Shulchan Aruch, we are more clear that if it's just a lav, something that you're not supposed to die over, and you die over it, you've done an aver. It's not a good thing to do. So that should be the case over here. That's the initial thought. Chara lo tama lo dama yacha is just a lav. You should certainly be usher for you, like the Radaz is implying with Chassid Shota, to get involved in it. But Rav Moshe says no, because this particular law is very special. Why? What are we getting at? Why is it special?
Because the human life is different.
Right. And he does a very interesting equation, Rav Moshe. Very simple math. He says, in general, the rule is, right, the chayvah. We are not required to die for any mitzvah. Hashem prefers, favors the neshama of a Jew, we'll leave it at that for now, right, a Jew, over any aveira, right? I'd rather have an aveira done than a Jew die. With three exceptions, right? We all know the three exceptions. One of them is Ritzicha. Why is Ritzicha an exception to that rule? Why do I have to die for Ritzicha? Just to avoid doing an aveira, I have to die, right? So what's the famous Rashi? Svara? It's Mishum Svara, that's what the Gemara says, right? And how does Rashi explain? What's the Svara? Right, but what does it come down to? So Rav Moshe, like, to me, is like playing a math game. He goes like this. He says, it's very simple, right? If no act of Ritzicha takes place, meaning the bandit, the non-Jewish bad guy who's holding a gun to my head saying, kill your friend, right? That's the scenario. Now, if I don't kill my friend, what happens? I'm dead, right? So, one Jewish neshama down. What if I pull the trigger? What happens then? Again, one neshama down, but something else happened. An avera. Simple math. Which is better? Just lose one neshama. Don't lose a neshama and an avera. What's the math in this case? That's what Moshe says. What's going on over here? We have choice. Right? Suffix sakana for me, vadai sakana for the other guy. If I don't do anything, what happens? One neshama is definitely dead. What else happens? I did an avera also, right? What was the avera? Lo tama lo damarecha. Okay? What if I do get involved? What happens then? Well, potentially, everybody lives. It's only a suffix neshama, right? Suffix at worst. Plus a mitzvah. For that reason, Rav Moshe totally disagrees with the Sitzeliezer and the whole and the Radvaz's approach and says it is, well, we'll see, the Radvaz is not so simple. Let's say with Rav Waldenberg that it is mutter, even when there is a sakana that's real, he would say it's mutter to take a chance. He would say liver transplant, liver donation, right, to save someone's life, even though I think many post-game would probably not be into that, right? Because there's real, more sakana, real genuine sakana to that procedure. But Rav Moshe would have to say it's mutter. Not a chassid shota. You could do it. Not chayav to do it, but you could do it.
But it works out to, that they're equal. If you were...
Equal, really? Here's a vadai loss of neshama.
One vadai. Here there's possibility of...
And in avera.
Two people die. No? If you get involved, this is something of two people die. And you have an avera.
Right, so... That's not a bad point because what it does, the likelihood of success is going to be a fact, right? So we're assuming a great likelihood of success for sure, which exists, by the way, in our two cases. Kidney donation generally goes very well, and bone marrow, you know, majority of cases will do well. Certainly, you'll give them high olam defined as a year. So good point, but the assumption was that the outcome was going to be good. That's what's making, you know, Ramosha's assumption is that it's going to be, you're doing this kind of for a good reason, like you're going to really save them. But otherwise, you're right. If the you can't look at these things blindly. You have to realize every case. That's why Psak is a case by case basis. If it's true that the chances in this particular case of a success were low, that would change the whole cheshbon. He might say it's usher to do. Very good point.
It sounds like almost a catch 22 in relation to cheshbon because the little tabot al dam reyecha issue, if the way it comes out in terms of the whatever the case is, something sakana. You're not chayav to, or you don't have to do it, or there's no.
You're certainly not chayav to do it.
Then lo tamod ends up not being part of the cheshbon because there's nothing. You're not being over.
Oh, okay, good.
That's
okay.
Well.
The truth is, I'll tell you the truth. That's in the words of Ramosha, which you have in front of you. Mm-hmm. He doesn't exactly do it like this. He's really measuring this neshama against that neshama, and the fact that we could save two. I'm throwing it in.
Okay, I mean that's...
You're right. I took a little liberty with that.
It's semantic.
And what you just said is correct, though. You're right. Because there's no chiyuv. You're right. You're not over on Lotam Adam. That's actually correct. This is incorrect to do that. It's a very good point. But that's true. It would be a mitzvah.
But isn't that the whole point of the Gemara over there, that there wouldn't be an Aveira in the thing by Ritzich as well, if they assume, meaning the Maskana, if the Gemara would have been opposite,
if you murdered somebody, that's an Aveira.
So not if it's Mutter. Meaning, if the Svar would have been different...
If, like, my life took precedence over the...
Right, so then it would have been Mutter. So it's the same thing. Meaning, we're assuming that there's a Pulas Aveira, even though you're not Mechuyev to do it.
Well, certainly the way Rashi explains the Svara, he's considering it an Avera. He's considering that there's a Maisa Avera taking place.
There's a Maisa Avera, even though it's not Osir.
It's going to be a Maisa Avera,
even though it's not Osir.
You know, you could deny it. It's interesting. Lumbus, right. Same parallel point. Okay, what does Rav Avad Yosef say? Rav Avad Yosef says, first of all, you know, there's another Rambaz. There's another Tshuva Rambaz. The Rambaz there hones in on what a lot of the people over here were honing in on, which is the setting of the sugya is of sas sakana. You can't deny that there's some sakana. And what I wanted you to see, and we'll end with this, what also is behind Rav Avad Yosef, and Rav Avad Yosef, by the way, Sahih Paskin's a mitzvah to do it. If we had to fill in our chart, he doesn't say the word chiyuv. I was waiting to see that word. I never saw it. But he expresses it the following. He says, it's not just mutter, it's a mitzvah. So I don't know if that means, and you're chayiv to do it. I'm almost ready to say that what he's implying is, and let's say if you look in Dr. Steinberg's presentation of this machlokes, I think he puts it that way, that he's saying that it's going to be lotam aladam reyacha, right? If the sakana, the suffix sakana, is comparable to the suffix sakana that occurs in the cases in the Gemara, right? Tavei v'yam, listim and chayos, if it's comparable sakana, then it's an issue of lotam aladam reyacha if you don't get involved. It's easy to fit even kidney donation into that sequence. And it certainly, Rabbi Yosef's tshuva is in the context of a kidney donation. And he's saying, to donate your kidney to save another person, lo rak mutter, mitzvah. So he uses that expression, mitzvah. What should I tell the bone marrow guy? What should I tell the... and just one last thing to see, is if you look in as simple Makoros as the Mishnah Berura, the Aruch HaShulchan, they have very important things to say. They say, they're going to go sort of mainstream on this and say, we hold, right, as the Sma and the Piskei Tshuva implied, that we don't pass them like the Yerushalmi, Mikra Adin, you're not chayev, like everybody's saying here, you're not chayev to put yourself to suffix sakana to save another person. However, they warn, and this is a lashon the Radbaz even used, and many of the contemporary Achronim, don't overdo it, right? And this was going through my mind as I was talking to this guy who was thinking about the new pigeon. Don't overdo the cheshbonos and figuring out if you're really besakana. It's an interesting emphasis, and you got to look at it inside. And then it was tearing me apart. I got to tell you because I'm reading in the Lolodoptic Biyosir. That's exactly what we were doing. In other words, like don't start thinking every possibility. Don't overestimate the sakana to yourself. That's what they're telling you. Although it's true, you're not chayiv to put yourself in suffix sakana, don't overdo it in your nervousness. One more opinion I want to throw in, and that's Rav Shachter. Now, I didn't ask him specifically to Shaila, but I once went to a shiur he gave on AIDS. And in the AIDS shiur, one of the issues he talked about was, what about treating AIDS patients when it was really a scary time, right? And it's suffix sakana. In order to save these people, let's assume a good Jewish AIDS patient, right? Without all the other issues of min and other things that complicate it. But if you have a person that it's reyecha and you want to save him, so what about putting yourself the sakana to take care of him? So what Rav Shechter often does in these type of cases, and I mentioned it even in the Chai Shav, Chai Olam cases, and any type of risk case, is he talks about the 50% rule. So in the setting of the AIDS issue, and I think you can extrapolate it over here, if the sakana is greater than 50%, and this the Radvaz mentions also, asa, if the sakana is greater than 50%, 10 to 50%, subjective. What do you think, the person who's going to get involved? If to you it's danger, then it's a sakana, and it should apply as a full-fledged sakana. Less than 10%, perhaps, batul daito etzokol adam, you shouldn't worry about it.
So what is subjective? You get to choose?
It's what your innate sense is. Is this a sakana or not? Right? And I've heard the Shafi use this in several different contexts. When there was the intifada and all the fighting, should parents be sending their kids to yeshiva and Yisrael? So he said, okay, if you think the sakana is greater than 50%, no, you shouldn't. If you think it's 10 to 50%, then it depends. Are you afraid to go or not? It's considered a sakana. It's less than 10%, which obviously we know. You should go. But I think that I thought that would be the way you did it, but there was somebody who I just spoke to minutes before this year, which is why I was late, because I had heard that they had been involved in a case like this, giving bone marrow and asking Rav Schechter's opinion on giving the bone marrow. And the answer I got was that Rav Schechter encouraged him to do it, but didn't tell him he's chayef to do it. What about the guy that wants to now? What about the guy that wants to back out? Who's a match? What would you tell him? It's Tzitz Eliezer. What would he say?
Probably gonna do that.
Yeah.
He never quantifies the degree of sakana. He does also quote this idea of do not be too medaktic about whether you're the sakana or not. But it was enough that based on the doctors telling him the kidney donation was a suffix sakana, he said usher to give kidneys. The Minchas Yitzchak said the same thing. Advice also usher to give kidneys because of the suffix sakana. It could be that this is what bothered me a little. If they had the other doctor information, the 99% assurance might be enough that you're not a chassid shota. Rav Moshe would certainly say in both cases it's absolutely mutter, it's never chayit. Rav Avad Yosef would say it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah for you to do it. It could be that you're over on Lo Tamad Adam Reyecha if you don't. That was the compelling force. Obviously, Post can have to work out the details based on what the single most important factor is to the best of your ability quantifying the degree of suffering. And if it's whatever a miyot shena matzoi is for that particular posek, then it will always be mutter, I would assume, l'chuliyam. And nowadays, when it comes to kidney donation, I don't know if anyone would be paskening l'chumer like 10, 15 years ago. But obviously, the case-by-case decision. All right. Any other questions?
Is there any field, let's say, for bone marrow, if you know for a fact?
Well, that's the shiloh. It could be. I have my personal opinion. It doesn't mean much. You have to ask the post, right?
What do you think?
My personal opinion would be that bone marrow is a field. To me personally, I feel like if I don't, I put myself in. If I don't give it, I'm over in a little time. And some people say, well, how do you know you're going to a Jew? If you match bone marrow, you're very likely going to a Jew. Very likely. The genetic matching there is very tight. My personal opinion would be that the risks... Now, I'm not saying Nupagen, by the way. That I'm afraid of. I put myself over here for Nupagen. It's too much of an unknown. Now, a lot of doctors would kill me for saying this. I'm not advocating anything. Personal opinion. My personal opinion is I have a personal fear of unknown. And I notice this very often. There's two types of patients. There's some that, you know, don't care about long-term uncertainty, right? They just want, you know, to go with the easier thing now. And there are others that are willing to take a harder procedure now as long as they don't have to deal with unknown long-term certainty. I'm in that category. I would do the bone marrow and the general anesthesia, which, general anesthesia, what kind of risk is that? We allow elective surgeries, cosmetic surgeries. We consider that Kevin Dasha Beirabim, Shomer Psayim Hashem. Right? I saw some sign that told me to say Psayim. And bottom line is, general anesthesia is like a miyuta dimiyuta risk. It isn't one that should be a consideration with the anesthati and these type of issues. So when it comes to bone marrow, which is regenerated, you don't have that out of the shach. To me, you should do it. I should do it. But it's not so pushy, because there's tsar involved, there's other factors, personal factors, and everybody has to get a clean sock for themselves and figure out what they want to do. Kidneys, to me, the unknowns of not having a kidney, also puts me over here. It's not so simple to give up your kidney, even though they'll tell you that out of 100 people that donate their kidneys, whatever, 95 do fine. Okay, I'm afraid of being in the 5. Right? Even though it's less than 10%. I don't know. I think I can fall back on the Shach, right? And Prima Gadim. There's others, not there's something. It's the Tzach that I don't have to give up my organ for whatever reason. I'm not being over the Tama Lamracha. That I wouldn't do. Other people feel differently. This friend of mine did it. He had a dream, whatever it was. His mystical side got him. His wife was kicking and screaming, but he did it. You know, I was like not pushing him to do it. I thought he was an amazing person for doing it, that he saved this girl's life. Believe me, Rabbi Elijah Yosef has very nice lashon for describing that person, and so does Rav Moshe. You know, these are great people. But chiyuv, not even close. Bone marrow, I think that it is in the person. Alright, are you going to start that? Come back at the end of the year. We're going to get into that very heavily. You know, you have to look at things first step at a time. But good question. I'm not being nice with the question. It's obviously a good question. But we'll get into that. We're going to get into that very heavily. Bezrat Hashem. Okay. All right. So in 2 weeks, we'll start. And I'm really serious.